What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we got a bonus episode for you here with two great guests. We're talking to Chris Stevens from Lighthouse and the legendary Stephen R. Bissette about the upcoming Kickstarter for Stephen's amazing project, Tyrant. Chris, Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Honor to be here.
It is an honor to have you here. I'm very excited to talk about this. Now, for those who don't know, back in the day, Tyrant was a four-issue series from Spider Baby Graphics, which was Stephen's imprint. Came out, made a huge impact. Now it is coming back for this Kickstarter, which is going to be posting pretty soon in the next 2 weeks, I think we could say. Chris, is that fair?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So date TBD, but if you know anything about Kickstarter, there's a pre-launch page up. You can check it out at Bissette Tyrant Deluxe Editions. And just to set up a little bit more here, then I'll stop talking and we'll start asking you guys questions. There's going to be two different editions that people can check out once the Kickstarter launches. But Stephen, to take it way back, Tyrant is a dinosaur action book. It was pretty huge when it came out. It was, as far as I'm aware, never quite finished. What is it like to revisit it now, 2.5-ish decades later? Maybe three decades later.
It's phenomenal. It not only wasn't quite finished, it was going to be a 15 to 20 year project. So it even wasn't quite born, to tell the truth. I mean, my plan was the birth, life, and death of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and I barely got through the birth, and then the entire direct sale market imploded. Within less than a year, it went from 14 distributors that I'd been working with when I was doing Taboo a few years earlier to one, to Diamond. And at that point, it was no longer economically feasible to continue. And I regretfully pulled the plug on that and on Spider Baby Comics, which I had published two issues of prior to making my decision. So, you know, it feels unbelievable to me that this is happening. It took Chris a few years of courtship, actually, to arrive at this point.
Hello.
And one of the deciding factors was Jim Rugg and the late, great Ed Piskor's Comics Kayfabe episode on Tyrant that really prompted me finally saying yes to Chris. And we've been working on it ever since. This has been at least 2 years in the making at this point, between finding and excavating all the original art, ranging for the scanning of everything up to the standards that Jim Rugg, who's designing the book, and Sean Michael Robinson, who really set the bar high for the quality of the scans, to get the best print quality imaginable. I'm giddy and still in disbelief at this stage.
Before we get to the courtship, which we're going to tease as long as we can here, I do want to ask you, Stephen, about like what first drew you to this story. Like, I feel like dinosaurs are hard, just from a storytelling perspective, I would imagine, and the actual creation of a book set then with not a ton of dialogue.
Dinosaurs are easy, Justin. I'll tell you what's hard is, the things I hate to draw, cars, buildings, anything to do with human beings and civilization. Drawing prehistoric life forms has been my calling since age 3 and 4. And Tyrant really was and still is a dream project for me. This is the dinosaur comic I always wish existed. Something that didn't involve time travel or traveling to another planet or to a lost island or, all the paleo pop culture that I grew up with, most of which I absolutely love, was primarily structured around certain science fiction tropes and fantasy tropes that would eventually get someone like myself as a viewer or reader to the land where the dinosaurs lived, and then it was over. My goal was to really immerse a reader like yourself in what the late Cretaceous era might have been like, what being a life form at that time would have been like. I grew up reading not just dinosaur books. I was one of those kids that my mother, you know, taught me to read by reading to me. I was one of those kids that my mom would stop when she hit the name of a dinosaur and I would say the name, right? Because
there was some name
she couldn't pronounce and I already had it down. So
yeah, Ankylosaurus was my guy back in the
day. Yeah, and even then, is it Ankylosaur or Ankylosaur? You know, 100%. It's like I've heard it both ways from paleontologists. So
yeah.
So this really was the dream project. When I was a kid, one of my favorite comics growing up in the Silver Age, reading comics off the newsstand, was Turok, Son of Stone. Mm-hmm. And then the back of every issue, there was a short, usually 3 to 4 page backup feature called Young Earth, which would be this sort of non sequitur, self-standing story about one dinosaur or one woolly mammoth or a little later in the run, a caveman. And those were as close as I ever read to the kind of comic I wished existed at that time. And, you know, those little 3 and 4 page bites were delightful and tantalizing, but I wanted just that. That's all I wanted.
Right.
So Tyrant really was, you know, my dream project. I entered the field professionally around 1977. And ever since then, I had been trying to convince publishers and editors to give me a shot, and nobody would. You know, they would come back with, oh, we have something just like what you're talking about. And it would turn out to be, and I'm not exaggerating, I mean, I was handed full scripts at times. And let's say it's a 22-page issue. It would be 18 pages of people in drawing rooms or in vehicles and 4 pages of, you know, finally making it to wherever the dinosaurs lived. And that was nothing I was interested in doing. I you know, that was me as a pair of hands being presumed as a way of facilitating exactly the kind of comic story I didn't want to tell. and, you know, the stars all aligned. I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, within the same year, the great Ricardo Delgado launched Age of Reptiles, one of my all-time mm-hmm. favorite comics.
Yes.
And I finally got Tyrant off the ground. I'd been talking about Tyrant for about 5 years prior to that. And I'd actually begun drawing what I thought was going to be issue one. The first splash page I ever drew on my drawing board was what became page one of Tyrant number 3, the chapter that takes place inside the egg. And as I was working on that, I realized, oh, I've got to give the backstory to this. Like, this is not the beginning of the story. Tyrant's mother laying the egg is the beginning of the story. In the meantime, you know, I got involved in a project with Image Comics. Jim Valentino rang me up and invited me to do a project with and for him. And that culminated in Alan Moore, Rick Veitch, myself, and a number of our friends like John Tottleman, Dave Gibbons, Don Simpson, Chester Brown, collaborating on 1963, the 6-issue miniseries that we did at Image. And I bring that up because that bankrolled my finally being free enough for a few years to do Tyrant. You know, the income off 63 bankrolled Tyrant, just as it bankrolled Rick Veitch finally doing his literal dream project, Roaring Rick's Rare Bit Fiends, Rick's right. comic of his dreams.
Wow.
Chris, just to move over to you and get into the courtship Bridgerton style, why on your end did you want to return to this all these years later? What drew you to the project, and what finally convinced Steven? Like, what was
name your favorite dinosaur?
Yes,
well.
Please.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
Oh, guys, it has to be the Ankylosaurus, you know, and I know.
Okay.
Friends.
You know, Alex, I am the right age. I'm the perfect age where I was a little boy in a small town that had a hole-in-the-wall, catty-cornered comic book shop next to a church. The guy sat behind the counter in the darkness smoking cigars and selling baseball cards, and comics were like, you know, he was kind of like that. But that happened to be... you know, the timing of it, who knows? And you know, the distribution back then was, it wasn't like every Wednesday was like New Book Wednesday or whatever in the early 80s.
Right.
So I don't know exactly the month or whatever, but for my memory of it, it was like in my little boy's mind, the summer of Swamp Thing, because it was when The Anatomy Lesson came out, and it was every DC comic for I'm sure somebody out there who's a historian of this stuff more than I am knows like the month and all that stuff. But the DC Comics ran a house ad that said, you know, Swamp Thing is coming and the anatomy lesson and this is the place and, you know, all that stuff. And at 8 years old, it was just very mysterious. And, you know, I knew what an anatomy was by eight, but like to see it put into that context, it just was like this mysterious thing. And the older people in the store were all talking about it. And, you know, I probably didn't read it or get my hands on a copy of it till I was 10. But, you know, for whatever reason, I just got deep into comics at a very young age and spent a lot of time by myself trying to figure out why is this comic affect me this way? Or why does it feel like this comic is actually happening when I'm reading it? But this comic I'm just reading, and, you know, all these thoughts of a little boy trying to figure stuff out. And Alan Moore and Steve and John's and T'Jonah Woods and John Costanza's Swamp Thing was just such a, you know, I spent a lot of time with my comics. I was an only kid and my mom and grandmom raised me, and some of the voices of the writers and creators that became most prominent to me as I was growing up almost became like de facto father figures or family members or something along those lines. And I just felt like I learned a lot, you know, growing up with those books. So Steve was always in my mind. And by the time Steve did Tyrant, the timeline for me syncs up where I'm kind of right out of high school. I don't know what the hell I'm doing with my life, you know, and things. I loved comics and the love was still there, but I wasn't feeling it the same way. I was, you know, you're getting a little older, your tastes change, you're trying to figure shit out, maybe you're idealistic, all that kind of stuff. And that was an era when Paul Pope's THB started coming out. He, you know, he had done a couple self-published, you know, the Untitled thing and the Dr. Richardson thing, but THB started coming out. David Max Kabuki, in a slightly different vein, but still in that independent and, hey, this is not superheroes. And I love superheroes, so it's not about that. It's just about, you know, growing beyond them. Something like Jeff Smith's Bone. That was that era. And Steve, with Tyrant, that was all the same time, really. You know, you could parse it out a year here, whatever, but it was all the same time. And Tyrant hit me maybe even stronger than any of those things, because the big difference to me was, as great as Bone and as great as Paul and Jeff Smith and David Mack and those guys are, and even though Smith is a little older than those guys and you know, there's different factors, but those guys were all just getting started, really. Bone was really, Smith had done his, you know, his strips or whatever, but Bone was Smith getting started in comics. THB was Paul getting started. Mac, you know, Kabuki, that was like, with Steve and Tyrant, at the age I was, 19 or so, it was like a whole different thing, because Steve, I was fully aware of it, already helped push comics forward with the work he did it on Swamp Thing. And then as a publisher with the work with Taboo, you know, we wouldn't have From Hell without Steve, and From Hell's one of the, you know, truly great comics ever made. So Tyrant hit me at the time when I was trying to figure out how to be a man, to be honest, and had no clue how to do it, because I had two women who raised me and I was special. I changed a light bulb. I was special, you know, and like, trying to figure out how to be a man was something that, you know, got active in my brain. And in some ways, and I don't know if I put this all together back then, I actually think Jim Rugg, who's designing the books, I think it hit Jim, who's a few years younger than me. I think it actually hit Jim more in a concrete sense this way. But I think sort of subconsciously, when I look back on it, it was like, oh, here's a grown man doing grown man work. You know, I knew Steve had pushed comics forward, but I also knew enough about the biography and stuff that he was probably in his early 40s at the time of Tyrant. And at 19, 40's an old son of a bitch, Steve, so I'm sorry about that.
I'm an older son of a bitch now, let me tell you.
How dare you? Now I'm offended.
Oh, well, hey, I'm like a grandfather at this point then, you know, without the kids. But no, so it was just Steve's. I said this in many of the talks we're doing. Steven Arbisette's a name that's just been in my head in a very real way since I was 8 years old. And, you know, the work that Steve's done, it just, and the connective tissue. So, like, it's not just coming out of the air. Is I made a book that came out in 2015 that I published called Little Nemo Dream Another Dream, which was a tribute to Winsor McCay's celebrated Little Nemo in Slumberland, you know, newspaper strips from the early part of the from the 20th century.
Right. That was Dream Another Dream. the Little Nemo project, right?
Yes, Little Nemo, Dream Another Dream. And in there, guys, you know, we invited, I forget the exact number. I see it different places. You know, it's funny. One thing says 112, another says 144. And I don't have the book in my house, so it's kind of, I can't check it. But it was over 100 artists that we asked to come and pay tribute to McKinney and do a Nemo strip. And in the process of that, it took a couple years to put together, you could imagine. And Jim Rugg, who I'd been friends with, I'd known Jim since the early 2000s. I met Jim through my good friend Farrell Dalrymple. And and I'd known Jim since Jim was still self-publishing Street Angel, you know, the very first original Street Angel single issues. And Jim was the Nemo designer and contributing his own page. And at one point in it, Jim said to me, "Hey, do you know Steve Bissett did like a Tyrant in Slumberland page? And it has nothing to do with this. He just did it." And I was like, "No, I had no idea about that." And said, "Do you like Steve Bissett?" And, you know, he had little idea that that would start me, you know, talking in his ear about Steve for the next decade, you know. But long story short, Jim and, you know, me and Steve connected. The Tyrant page that Steve had done for, I believe, a student anthology when Steve was teaching called Sundays. That page was slightly modified, included in the Little Nemo collection. We were thrilled to have Steve in there. It felt right, him being in there with you know, guys like Bill Sienkiewicz. And, it just felt right. We wanted to have – it was a real special thing for me, for Steve to be in there. So we kept in touch, and a little bit here and there, just how are you on Facebook and stuff like that. I would see Steve's posts. And Tyrant was in my mind. I sort of had the Locust Moon company that I had when we put the Little Nemo book out. We owned a comic book shop in Philly, and we published some books, and Little Nemo sort of being the height of it. And that all sort of went away, and it took me a while to regroup, let's say. But when I did, I started doing a lot of freelance editing and putting books together for people, kind of like a book packager, and putting creative teams together on projects and stuff like that. And I did a lot of crowdfunding for other people and, you know, made about $1 million in the last, you know, few years or whatever. And I just got sick of seeing the practices and I just wasn't happy with the partnerships. And, you know, I don't know. I don't have a lot of time for, it's easy to treat people right when you do these things. And I just wanted to see if I could be in control of doing that myself. So Tyrant sort of started to grow in my mind of like, hey, I'm doing well with this freelance editing stuff, and I'm sort of looking to do my own stuff again. And, you know, what would be, you know, what's the thing to do? And I'm like, well, man, I've been thinking about Tyrant since I was, you know, since the mid 90s, and Steve and me have talked about it a little. He always says no when I bring it up, though. But I went back and I said, hey, Steve, I'm getting my stuff together, and I'm doing pretty okay with it. And I'm learning a lot of stuff, and I might take another shot at making my own books. How about Tyrant? Steve said, Chris, thank you. Appreciate it. Hope you're doing well. No. And I said, oh, okay. All right. You know, a few months later, you know, I get a thought in my head. Hey, Steve, how are you up there? You doing okay? How's the snow? What about Tyrant, right? And Steve's just, you know, hey, Chris, it's flattering. No thanks. And then
you're like, this book made me a man, Stephen. I need this for the world.
He never said that to me. I'm learning for the first time that,
hey, we got to keep these things interesting.
That's right.
No, that's real.
And I had been talking to Jim about it. Me and Jim weren't talking a ton. You know, he was super busy with his stuff, and I was trying to get my stuff established. But I would talk to Jim here and there, and I'd say, oh, I'm talking to Steve, or, oh, I talked to Steve about Tyrant again, you know, so that kind of stuff. And I would always say to Jim, like, hey, you know, don't give up hope, you know. And then one day, maybe the facts of the story, if we did the forensics, who knows? But my memory of it is, Steve, one day I got a message from you, and it just said, hey, Chris, how are you? And it was the link to the Cartoonist Kayfabe Tyrant video, and it said, have you seen this? It's like I've said this a million times now, and it's kind of like almost being a shitty friend, but we're all so busy and have our own interests. I love Jim. I knew Jim and had made Kayfabe a big thing. Ed used to come, God bless Ed. Ed used to come to Philly when I had the stores and like hang out. And so I knew Ed and all that stuff, but I just never watched comics YouTube until like 3 months ago when I realized, you know, like, okay, you know, I got to figure this stuff out a little. And And it's been it's so much fun too. I don't want to digress much, but it's really been fun doing this stuff. And it just feels like, said to Jim yesterday on the phone, the sense of community that it's really a beautiful thing. It's like, you're not sitting at the lunch table alone, you know, like everybody likes this stuff and we're all excited to talk about it. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Welcome
but
to
no,
the club.
I got that message from Steve and I saw it, and I won't lie. And Steve, I might never have said this to you, and I know you'll appreciate it. I saw it, and you know, I don't have a ton of skill with this stuff, but if I have anything, it's like I kind of maybe have a little intuition. And I saw it, and I just said, this is going to happen. Thank God.
Yeah, you know? Well, you were right. You were that right.
I didn't even click the video. I just, because I knew Steve, I knew how Steve, I had enough of a sense of the regard Steve had for Jim and for Ed. And I in my mind, the math of it sort of just all added up. I knew Steve knew that they were both, first of all, they were of the younger generation, and the point of view they would have on the viability of bringing this thing back to market would be stimulating, I think, to Steve. He would realize these are two successful younger creators, and they're saying this thing will be a success. So there was that element. And then I just knew Steve respected the hell out of Jim creatively. So once I saw it, I did get fairly confident it was going to happen. And I think it came together pretty quickly after that. Steve had said to me, well, hey, you know, Jim Rugg should design this. What, you know, what do you think? I said, well, yeah, absolutely. You know, so like it all just was, yeah, I think I called Jim that day or texted him and say, hey, could I call you? And just said, well, guess what, buddy? You know, so yeah, I forget when that was, Steve. That might have been a year and a half ago or something. But
no, it was longer ago. Our,
because it would have been 2 years ago.
Right. One of the speed bumps, not to bring anybody down, but one of the speed bumps is my wife, Marjorie, and I are our son, Michael, came down with brain cancer, which took him in June of 2024. And I put Chris and Jim, you know, on the waiting docket because we really had to get through that personal endurance test, that trial by fire. And but during that time, I still worked off and on the project. I dug through. I mean, I've got over 50 years of artwork here, and I'm a pack rat. I don't throw anything out. I've got every purchase order from every distributor that ever came in, with the exception of the papers I had donated to the HUIE library in Arkadelphia, Arkansas. They've got a portion of my papers there, primarily related to Taboo. And so during that time, even with what was happening with our family, I began going through my flat files and assembling, trying to find every scrap of original art, every paste up and mechanical, everything connected with Tyrant. And and Chris, you were wonderful. And it was probably about 6 months after our son had died that I said, okay, let's go. So that would have been, you know, late summer, late fall 2024. And we've been working on it pretty steadily since then. It took a while to make all the geographic arrangements, you know, for obvious reasons. And it's not a matter of trust with Chris or Jim. It's trust in FedEx, UPS, and the postal system. Yeah. I didn't want to be moving this irreplaceable original art, you know, through the mail. And it took a little time to settle on, you know, who was willing to take on the enormous task of scanning, and particularly scanning up to the standards that Sean Michael Robinson and Jim Rugg required for the production of the book. And Rick Veach's oldest son, Ezra Veach, who I've known since he was about 6 months old, and my very good friend, Mark Mastel, both agreed to take on the thankless task of scanning not just the Tyrant original art. I mean, when Chris and Jim said to me, Steve, we want to do a complete edition. I forget what the moniker we were using at the time was, Chris.
I think we were calling it the Masterpiece Edition. And then
And Chris wanted everything, like any dinosaur, anything I had ever done. And let me tell you, you know, despite the fact that there were few venues where I could convince an editor to let me do it, there was a ton of work in my flat files.
Let me ask you about that real quick. So
Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for five different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.
Were you just continuing to work on this even in all of this time this past year? Just like,
No. I'm sad to say, Justin, when I pulled the plug, I really pulled the plug.
You really stopped. Okay, so this is just really all the material stopped. From that time.
This right. What there is what you saw in issues 1 through 4. There was some work done on issue 5, including the color cover, which my friend Mark Martin had done the color work on. And I had all the text features for number 5 done. You know, I was working toward having that done in a month or two, but I stopped cold. I mean, when everything came down to Diamond being the only game in town, long story short, when I was publishing, the two major distributors in North America were Diamond Comics and Capital City Distribution. Diamond's paycheck paid the whole printing bill. Hmm. Capital's check was pure profit, right? Mm-hmm. And this meant it was viable. And as soon as everything else was gone, every other distributor was gone, and it was just down to Diamond, I knew I could pay my printing bill, but that wasn't going to subsidize, you know, months to a year of work on individual issues. It took me a year to do issue number 3, the story inside the egg. So I really, to answer your question, Justin, I really pulled the plug. But what there is all the dinosaur stuff I had done prior to pulling the plug. I mean, the first comic story I ever did that was just pure dinosaurs was a story called Scraps, when one of my Kubert School classmates, Ken Fedenowitz, decided to do his own zine, and he did this gorgeous comic zine called Third Rail. Mm. Tom Yates did an original story in there, an adaptation of a Clark Ashton Smith story, The Ninth Skeleton. I did this dinosaur story called Scraps. Scraps is in the complete edition. I still had all the original art. And Chris and Jim urged me to dig deeper. You know, I found the original art to the one page I had done to the Joe Kubert School. We didn't have a yearbook. You know, there were only 23 of us in that first class, but we did a zine called Manticore, and we each did a one page comic story. And mine was about a prehistoric man called Dark Time. That's going to be in the complete edition. And we're also going to include pages from, we can't reprint entire stories that belong to Marvel and DC that I had done. You know, I did an ambush bug cameo for Robert Loring Fleming and the late, great Keith Giffen. And they invited me to do whatever I want. So I mocked all of the War That Time Forgot, my favorite comic from the Silver Age featuring dinosaurs. We're going to include a page of that. You know, fair use would allow Chris and Jim and I include samples of the other work. So there's going to be glimpses, you know, sample pages out of my original art stash from earlier dinosaur stories I'd done for Marvel, for DC, for others.
That's awesome. Very cool.
But it's going to be everything. It as best as we humanly have been able to excavate from the geological sedimentary layers.
Your own paleontology.
My own paleontology. Self-paleontology, Justin. So
your bones.
Digging my bones and my paper. And believe me, paper is, you know, right now Jim has me looking for one piece of paper. I don't know if I'm going to find it, but I'm giving it my best shot, Chris. Right?
We're very serious about that piece of paper. Can
you tell us what the paper is? That's
You what it is. So Steve writes a really what's going to be one of the really special elements of this thing, especially for people who are, you know, deep fans of Steve's. There's about a 7,000 word essay Steve wrote that we will include in both the original art edition and the complete edition. And in there, you know, guys, this is bad.
It's the Joe Kubert letter.
Thank God. Yeah. Thank God.
Yeah. It's the Joe Kubert letter.
I'm a little under the weather in the brain.
I could not find the postcard from Will Eisner, which thankfully you guys didn't know about until this minute, but so that may yet turn up too, Chris.
I came back to the path here. Yeah. The essay starts off and it says, "Dear Steve," and it's a letter from Joe Kubert to Steve set congratulating him on what he's accomplished with Tyrant. And me and Jim, awesome. the heartless taskmasters that we are. We read it. We said, Steve got this essay done. It's only 7,000 words, but we'll accept it. And what can we do about this Kubert letter? We need the real letter. And Steve said, geez, guys, you know, like I feel, you know, here we are. So, Steve, the only saving grace for that, my friend, so you don't have to search too much. And I don't know if we've joked about this publicly yet, but there is the Joe Kubert font.
Well, there is. But, you know, the letter was written on Joe's sepia tan colored paper with the background drawing of Tor, his caveman character.
Yeah.
It, you know, and
but now we really need it, Steve.
And Joe's signature is so distinctive, you know, and it's just Joe, you know, it's like we were close enough personally that it was just signed Joe, you know, not Joe Kubert, just Joe.
What, so, what would you guys do if I was like, oh, I actually have it here right now?
Oh, man. Well, I would. My first question, Alexander, would be, OK, so where'd you steal that from?
Yeah, how did you get that?
How did I get that?
I think I would say that Sean Edgar told me that you were like super Steve historian and you knew everything about, you knew everything about comics. So I think I would just say, oh, good, Alex, can you scan that?
Yeah, like, no, it's,
you know, no exaggeration. It's, I have over 15 4-5 drawer metal file cabinets here in my basement library. It's somewhere in those. Right. I mean, wow. I've kept everything. It's here. But I just haven't come across it yet.
We'll find it.
Steve, this is a little off the Kickstarter, but since you brought it up, I'm curious. You've been essentially retired from comics for a bunch of years now. Now that Diamond is dead, do you have any urge to come back?
Well, you know, the best advice I ever got back in the 80s and early 90s was from a good friend at that time, Dave Sim, who said, never go away. I never went away, Alexander. I retired from the American comic industry, but and I shifted gears. I began working in the video retail and rental industry. I was a shareholder in First Run Video in Brattleboro, Vermont, the first superstore in that part of New England. And I stayed there, working my way up from clerk to co-manager and buyer until the spring of 2005, when I was invited to become part of the faculty at the Center for Cartoon Studies that James Sturm and Michelle Ollie were launching in White River Junction, Vermont. And I then was teaching comics and graphic novels every day of the week for 15 years. Now, during that lull period, to your perceptions, to the perceptions of comics fans, I was writing a weekly video review column for local newspapers, and I was illustrating minimum of one book a year for the boutique horror novel and short story collection marketplace, publishers like Cemetery Dance and so on. Hmm. So I was, you know, I continued working as an artist, doing covers and interior illustrations for books. And I continued as a writer, more prolific than ever, doing not just a weekly column, but often interviewing filmmakers. And that would be an additional article that would appear in a given week. When I shifted gears into teaching, you know, 15 years of teaching comics and graphic novels, I was in a very hands-on, day-to-day, week-to-week working relationship with the new generation of creators out there. And it really felt like, you know, I always regretted that I could never pay back. There was no way to give back to Joe Kubert and Muriel Kubert and what they had done for me and Rick Beach and Tom Yates and Ron Zalmy and John Tottleben and Tim Truman and all our friends and classmates at the Kubert School. And it felt like teaching the next generation in this new it was a graduate level program. You could earn your MFA if you had your prior degrees necessary to get a Master of Fine Arts degree. This was a way of paying back. And I'll never forget, it came up in conversation my second year at CCS. I mentioned to James that, you know, I really wish there was some way, like, I could go down to New Jersey and, you know, do a guest class once a month or something. And James said, Steve, don't kid yourself. You're paying back Joe every day you set foot in our classroom. And I realized he was right. You know, he wasn't blowing sunshine up my ass. He was right. And so in a way, I never went away, Alexander. It's just you didn't get to see a lot of what I was doing. You know? And right now, I mean, you know, for the 2 years that we've been working on this, Chris and Jim, have had to take on other work. I mean, we're all finding other ways to subsidize this time. We haven't earned a penny from this. If anything, right. we've expended a great deal of money, time, and energy on this project. I've subsidized the work with a whole new freelance career. I do bonus features for Blu-ray and 4K releases of wow. all kinds of movies. And I haven't gone looking for one job. They all come to me. And I just self-published via Amazon's Kindle program, two volumes of S.R. Bissett's Tyrant Presents Paleo Pop. They're collections of articles I had written for a fanzine called Monster over the last 15, 20 years. And these are all the paleontological pop culture articles that I did, articles, interviews, and so on. And in the back pages, I did something I'd never done before, right? Like most authors have a list at the front of their book of here's the other works by this author. And I finally did that. I have one page of the work I've done as a graphic novelist and as a fiction, short fiction, and nonfiction writer. At 8-point type, I have three pages listing all the DVD and Blu-ray bonus features I've done over the past 2 years.
Wow.
Crazy. This is what has subsidized the work on Tyrant, you know, the pay from that. So long story short, Alex, you know, I never went away. I just wasn't doing work that was visible much in the comic market any longer. I did get to work with editor Chris Duffy. I would say Chris is one of the four or five best editors I ever worked with. And not counting present company, Chris.
And you only work with Chris's.
Karen Berger got the best work out of me anybody ever did on Swamp Thing.
Chris Duffy
invited me in. Most people don't realize I contributed to not one, not two, but three issues of SpongeBob comics.
Really?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Do some homework. Chris would reach out to me and say, hey, Steve, you know, we're doing an issue with the crab cake monster. Do you want to draw the crab cake monster portion of this story? And Derek Dryman was the writer artist that I worked with. And I ended up contributing to three stories. And it was a lot of fun. You know, it was very organic. Derek would send me his layouts. And then I would not just pencil, but fully ink my portion of the artwork, get that scanned, send those files to Derek, and then he would incorporate it into his SpongeBob art because nobody but Derek was allowed to draw SpongeBob in these particular stories. Even though, I must say, in the first story I did, I drew a hell of a SpongeBob. It's too bad.
Well, when are we going to get at the Kickstarter for Stephen R. Bissett's SpongeBob, the original art edition?
I think they already collected them in hardcover, actually. Those whoever the publisher was, I'm forgetting, did include two of the stories in their hardcovers. So, and
right
I also
after this, I meet with Duffy about the rights, you know?
There
right?
you go. Okay. And I also, for Chris Duffy, he did a book, a graphic novel of adaptations of World War I poetry by soldiers and famous writers. It was called Above the Dreamless Sleep. And I did a 2-page Rudyard Kipling poem.
Which SpongeBob character did you feature in that?
I had to kill the SpongeBob characters because World War One was a terrible trench war.
Yes, and, over the trench, Patrick Starr.
I just want to jump in one second, Steve. I just want to jump in before we move past that point. Steve, we haven't talked about this, and he's on my list to reach out to, and maybe me and you, I'll text you afterwards. Derek Dryman is in all the letters pages. Of Tyrant.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I published one of his cartoons in issue one. Yeah, that's Derek.
I'd be lying if I didn't click on that until a couple months back, and I'm reading the...
Let's reach out to Derek. Maybe we could get permission or clearance to include a couple of my SpongeBob pages to just make the point that, you know, that legacy... It's funny how all this stuff fits together, you know? But
yeah,
you're right.
Exactly.
Derek is in almost every letters page.
He definitely is, and he's breaking your stones in most of them.
Oh, yeah. And the first one is like, you know, stop with this paleontology shit. I just want dinosaurs fighting each other, you know?
Yep, and
that actually prompted a couple of friends who were concerned about how long it took me to do each issue. And they were like, that guy's right. Like, just do your devil dinosaur, you know?
Oh, I'm sure you loved hearing that.
Quit with all this science crap, you know? I'd have kept the schedule better, that's for sure, but it wouldn't have been the comic I wanted it to be. So
one last word on Chris Duffy, guys, is he's the guy who keeps me from being able to say I'm the only man who got Steve Bissett to do comics in the last 20 years.
Well, it's not just Chris Duffy. I also did a lot of work. I did a lot of work for and in anthologies that Center for Cartoon Studies,
You're right.
Put together. And someday, you know, with the permission of the surviving alum, we've unfortunately lost a few, the COVID pandemic and so on. I'd love to do a print-on-demand book collecting that work that I had done in those anthologies, because they were only seen by the students every year at CCS, in fact, starting the third year of operation. So it would have been 12 to 13 years. We would start the spring semester with a two-week crash course project where the students would be broken up into teams, and they had to create from scratch in and complete a fully printed full-color comic that they distributed at the end of the 2 weeks to their classmates, a full comic book from beginning to end. They had to work as teams. It was a way of simulating how comic books used to be put together. You know, monthly comics were put together very quickly. And they had to be done within 4 weeks, or they weren't a monthly comic. So I edited a team every year. So I've got 12 or 13 comics that I edited, and occasionally I would ink a cover or lend a hand to some of the sickest ad pages we ever did, because there would be parody ad pages in these. That's a pretty significant body of work, too, that I did donate a complete collection of both sets of comics. One is in Columbia University's collection, and the other one is in the Billy Ireland Museum collection in Columbus, Ohio. So that work is accessible to serious diehard researchers and fans who want to make the trek and physically look at that work. And I'm sure there's a collection in the CCS library, because they keep, you know, all the students' print projects. But I did a lot of comics work, Alex, that, you know, we're seen in this, the community I was part of, and not much beyond that. Some of that work, though, was sold at conventions. And one of those pieces, Tyrant in Slumberland, is the one that Jim Rugg that brought Chris Stevens and I together in the first place. Wow. And Chris also invited me to participate in the Golem of Venice Beach project. Originally, I was approached to do one page. I'll let Chris describe the project to you. And I came back with a few pitches and proposals, and what we settled on worked better in two pages, and not because I was getting paid the best page rate I ever got in comics ever in my entire life. Thank you, Chris.
But, back, Chris Duffy.
It just worked better as two pages.
So, this Chris fight continues.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, take that, Chris Duffy. Actually, I was paid very well for SpongeBob, but the Golem of Venice Beach.
You know how much I would kill to edit SpongeBob. My wife loves SpongeBob, and when she started that like 20 years ago, I just said to myself, what is going on? And then very shortly after, I started saying, who lives in a pineapple under the
there
sea?
There you go. Yeah, our daughter Maya loves SpongeBob, and she's
I was jealous
before we got her 40s now, you know. So
before we got on this podcast, I told Justin we got to turn the conversation to SpongeBob somehow.
Well, here we are. It's as if you tipped me. It's as if you paid me, Alex.
To get back to the Kickstarter really quickly. And just sort of start to wrap up here, we've obviously talked about a lot of details of what people can expect. But Chris, I know it's still TBD. You want to do a big splash when it actually comes. But anything you want to tease to get people to sign up on that pre-launch page?
Oh, absolutely, Alex. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, so the Kickstarter, we're going to be the two main features are going to be the original art edition, which will be somewhere around 12 by 19. And you know, I think your audience is likely familiar with the Scott Dunbeer created artist edition format, and we're doing our best to take that and, you know, hopefully maybe we can do some stuff with it that, you know, makes it stand out. And we have the original art edition, and then we have the complete edition that we've been talking about, which is going to be a comprehensively exhaustive collection of all of the Tyrant related materials, any dinosaur related material Steve's ever done. And Steve was talking about earlier, there are certain elements of work that he did for, you know, certain publishers that under fair use, you know, we'll be able to include little snippets of. So it's going to be very, you know, comprehensively exhaustive.
And Chris was sliding these to us in the chat here.
I was sending a couple little things.
And it is awesome. Very cool. Those little pieces are such a nice, when you say complete, you mean it. It's really
cool. I didn't want to cut anybody off earlier. One of the things that gives me a lot of joy, and this is going to sound so funny, I know, but one of the things that when we talk about the complete edition, that in the back of my mind, every time I talk about it with Jim, Steve, anytime it comes up, I have my old partner from Locust Moon, Andrew Carl, helping me behind the scenes. Anytime I talk about it, it's the fact that we're going to run Steve's correspondence with the printer. And that gives that's how complete this thing will be. But as far as items, Alex, yeah, I'm very excited. Jim Rugg is designing a blacklight poster set. So there'll be three Jim Rugg designed blacklight posters.
I love them. I love them. You know, when I went to college in the 70s, I'd have killed to have that in the room when the bong was broken out in the morning by my roommate. You know, it's like, oh, wait.
Are you going to have a bong on one of the levels?
That would have been nice, but we didn't go there. We didn't go
I'm
there.
Looking at Alex's shelf, and I thought I saw one right behind the Watchmen. I wasn't too...
Alex has got all the stuff you need.
I'm not that cool. That is a sonic screwdriver from
I
Dr.
said it's
Who.
That kind of morning. I didn't know. Nobody.
It's a Watchmen bong. Wait a minute. I see the logo underneath
it. Yeah, exactly.
That would be perfect for
I
Mr.
smoked
Moore.
It 35 minutes ago.
Alex, there'll be
you
a
know,
black...
but I did contribute some very unique items to the crowdfunder that Chris can tell you about. Some one of a kind Bissette work is going to be part of the perks.
Awesome.
There's the blacklight poster set. There will be a die cut slipcase that people have the option of buying the complete edition with or without. The original art edition will come with a unique tip in signature plate. And the complete edition will come with the option. I should say with the option. You'll have the option of getting the original art edition with a unique to the original art edition, specially designed by Jim, signature plate. And then the complete edition, you'll have the option of getting it with or without its own unique tip-in signature plate. So there'll be two different, signed by Steve, designed by Jim, unique signature plates that'll be bound into the different editions if you choose to purchase that edition. We're also going to have, and I'm going to send it to you, Steve. I just got it. We're going to have a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, which I think will be a lot of fun.
Wow, that's great.
Dinosaurs and puzzles, you know?
Oh, wow. Wow.
One of the features in the complete edition will be a reversible triptych. So a reversible, you know, gatefold that folds out, you know, the length of three covers, basically. And on one side, it's color, the other side, black and white. So you'll see Steve's, one of Steve's really iconic images that he created to use actually as a promotional image when he was doing this originally back in, you know, the original single issue, Spider Baby Time. So we're going to turn that. Jim has already worked with that. And like Steve said, some of the most special things we have are hand-painted ceramics that Steve's made, and I have some of them sitting here. What should I show them, Steve?
Go for it.
Let's see. I know only you guys can see. Well, my camera. So you see that? Is that beautiful?
Yeah.
Oh, that is very cool. For anybody, this is a Triceratops, I assume.
Yeah, a ceramic Triceratops. I hand painted, and I did a number of mugs. There's a mug up on that top shelf. Handle them with care now, Chris.
For a second, I thought you were going to just toss it back on the shelf.
And these weren't mass produced. Each of them is hand painted and unique.
Wow, that's
There's
beautiful.
None other like them. And
for anybody listening, it's silhouette Tyrannosaurus, sort of on a sunset type background.
Guys, check this thing out, though, guys.
That's wow. Again, for anybody listening, it is a full on painted dinosaur skull.
A T-Rex skull.
Our most special item, if it comes to me, come here. This is going to be, we haven't figured out the tier for this one yet.
Oh, you're going to sell your cat?
Yeah,
that's great.
Well,
hard to mail that out, but
these books are going to be expensive. We got to make ends meet, you know?
I mean, you joke about that, but this is so complete, it feels like you are including dinner along
well,
with
Well, there
the
we
book.
Go. There we go. There yeah. we go. I also provided... I dug into my Spider Baby backstock, and there's a Carnosaur art portfolio that I did back in 1989. I still had them in perfect condition. Those are part of the perks as well. The Faces of Fear horror art portfolio with Leatherface on the cover. I tried to provide as much as I could to Chris to really
you've been amazing.
Grace this with some unique items that all of which I signed.
Awesome.
Including the ceramics are signed on the bottom of each piece.
So. That is so cool. This project is so cool, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat about it. For anybody, again, who wants to check it out, it's going to be on Kickstarter very soon. You can check it out at Beset Tyrant Deluxe Editions. Dashes between that. But you can search for it on Kickstarter. You know how searching works. Chris, Stephen, thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Our great pleasure. Our great pleasure. Thanks for inviting us aboard. If we're ever of use again, don't hesitate to reach out and ask. Before we get off, I need to mention a few things. I'm a huckster. Yes. Along with the crowdfunder, I have available on Amazon two volumes now of Paleo Pop. You can find them everywhere in the world on Amazon. I also have three sketchbooks out, all monster sketchbooks, Thoughtful Creatures, Brooding Creatures, and the brand new one that Mark Mastel, who edited and curated this series and designed the books, he and I put together, In the Mood for Monsters, which I particularly recommend if anyone's interested in my work, because in there is my essay on why I love and draw monsters. And that'll answer the question, why I do this. And that was one of your questions, Justin. Why are you doing this?
Well, yeah, why are you doing this?
Pick up In the Mood for Monsters. The answers are in there.
Awesome. Chris, Stephen, thank you again so much. Really looking forward to the Kickstarter. Have a lovely day.
Thanks. Great talking to you, guys. SpongeBob forever.
Take care. Thank you.